A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Going to be spending some time with our friend Mark Walters from Armed American Radio. Have a number of topics, all sort of interrelated, dealing with the right to carry. And we've seen some good news on that front. In fact, we've seen some great news on that front in the Commonwealth of Virginia, where a number of Commonwealth attorneys are saying they have no plans to enforce the new ban on not just manufacturing, selling, transferring so-called assault firearms, but the ban on carrying those assault firearms in public. Also had some good news this week from the Second Circuit Court of Appeals, and we've got potentially another vehicle for the Supreme Court to use to strike down some of the gun-free zones that have popped up in a Democrat-controlled state since the Bruin decision was handed down 4 years ago. So, again, a lot to cover with Mark Walters from Armed American Radio. Let's get to it. Take a look and a listen. Mr. Mark Walters, how are you, sir?
I'm doing wonderful this morning, Cam. How about yourself, brother?
I am good, man. I appreciate you being flexible this week. Wanted to do Mondays with Mark and then wanted to do Tuesdays with Mark. But anyway, I'm doing a Tuesday with Mark. Just that's the way the week shook out. But
I understand being overbooked. Trust me.
Yeah. Well, yes, indeed you do. And I'm looking for, are you going to be doing a Sunday Monster Cast on the Memorial Day?
I am. Yeah. We've not missed. And this is a great stat. I'm real proud of this. But we are now in our 18th year. We have never one time missed a Sunday show, not once in 18 years. So wow. I haven't gone back and done the math, but multiply 52 times 18, and that's how many straight Sundays we've done. It's no doubt a broadcast record, no question.
That is wild. Congratulations on that.
Proud of that.
Perfect attendance. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. Yeah. I want to focus on the right to carry because there are some interrelated stories here. We saw earlier this week the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in a somewhat surprising decision, Mark, just because of how hostile the Second Circuit has been towards the right to keep your arms. It actually found a gun control law that went too far.
Yeah.
The vampire rule that New York put in place, the ban on carrying on all private property by default. You had to invite those concealed carry holders in. That's why Firearms Policy Coalition's Robert Mano deemed this the vampire rule. And the Second Circuit said, no, you can't do that. There is no historical tradition of simply outlawing, the right to bear arms on all private property. New York has gone too far. And this, I think if nothing else, this is good news for the plaintiffs in Wolford versus Lopez, because that is the one vampire rule that has been upheld around the country. Right now that the New York Second Circuit has said New York's law goes too far.
Well, I think you're in agreement with me that Wolford doesn't stand. Supreme Court's going to strike that down. I think maybe the Second Circuit may have seen the writing on the wall there. But what's fascinating about the Second Circuit decision is it's a two-pronged decision, really, with the parks urban parks versus rural parks in New York. They didn't touch on the rural parks because the plaintiffs didn't bring that up in the case. And so they stayed within the guardrails. But what I love about the Second Circuit ruling is they stayed within the framework of Bruin. And that's a testament to the strength of the Bruin decision as we move forward. So that makes me feel even better about the Wolford v. Lopez case in Hawaii. Now, let's look at that Second Circuit decision. What does that say? Because as you mentioned, it starts with a presumption that you are not allowed to carry a firearm on private property. And the key distinction here is that is open to the public. Okay, that's open to the public. Well, the court decided in Bruin that there was no history or tradition to that, which kicked in the Bruin rule, if you will, and had the government had to find a way or get around that, which they could not do. So, boom, you got a victory in the Second Circuit. And that's huge news as we go forward, particularly in your state in Virginia, because you're getting ready to wipe out reciprocity with states across the country under Spanberger's new rules. So this all kind of ties together, and it kind of makes me wonder, is Spanberger and the Democrats in Virginia even paying attention to what's going on outside the Commonwealth borders? I don't know. It doesn't look like that. I think they are. I just don't think they care, Cam. And they just don't care, period. Yeah.
They don't. It's been interesting because this week Spanberger has ticked off a number of her constituents by vetoing bills that, including bills dealing with issues that she said she was in favor of, like, establishing a retail marijuana market. She vetoed that bill, vetoed a public bargaining bill for state employees. She's basically ticked off every part of her coalition except for gun control advocates, right? That's the one area where she did not issue any vetoes. She signed all of those gun laws into effect. She's actually got a couple of days, I think, before she has to sign every one of them, I think, by May 23rd. You say the money. And look, the money matters, but we're talking about high-dollar donors, too, in some of these other areas. I look back on the fact that before she even ran for Congress, Abigail Spanberger was wearing the red shirt. She was a Moms Demand Action volunteer. I'm sure she loves the Bloomberg bucks. Every Democrat does. But she's a true blue believer in gun control. This isn't just a transactional political decision for her. I think she truly wants, and don't forget, I mean, when she tried to amend Virginia's assault firearms ban, she tried to make it worse.
Yeah.
She tried to redefine assault firearms so that any a semi-automatic firearm with a magazine that had more than 15 rounds in it would be illegal to carry in public. I know it's real easy to say, you know, these anti-gun politicians are just chasing the money. No, I think with Abigail Spanberger, I think it's personal. I think she really does want to enact these gun control laws, not because of her rich donors, not because she wants to stay on Bloomberg's good side, but because she honestly doesn't believe we have the right to keep and bear these commonly owned firearms.
Well, that begs a question. Does she not care about constitutional law? Does she not care about Supreme Court decisions, Supreme Court precedent? And I would leave this with viewers. I ask this question. We know we're going to get an assault weapons ban case. So let's kind of tie this together briefly. We know we're going to get that case at SCOTUS. Kavanaugh's tipped his hat. We've talked about it ad nauseum. It has to happen now sooner than later because of what happened in Virginia. And I think it will be. I think that's the push that SCOTUS might be looking for. Hopefully we get one of these cases soon. Then we'll talk about the seven cases that are filed in Virginia right now against that. Okay, you've got state and federal. The cavalry has arrived in great strength and big numbers in the state of Virginia. But Cam, I think when we get an assault weapons ban case, we'll find the right way to phrase this and articulate this. We saw what they did post Bruin, right? They just went absolute bonkers. They meet in the middle of the night to try to find insensitive places in New York, and places off limits is an example of that, that was signed in the middle of the night to kind of get around Bruin. I'm asking this question. This is the host in me. How do they try to get around a flat out, you cannot ban guns in common use? And what people need to understand is while we reference assault weapons, or as Spanberger and the Dems like to call it, assault firearms, this ruling is going to impact guns in common use, everything from pistols on down the line. Now, I don't know how they're going to do this, but I quote Alan Gottlieb again and again and again. Their creativity knows no bounds. I don't know how they try to get around that when the Supreme Court smacks them in the head, but they will try. And this is why I bring this up, because of the way Spanberger is acting, as you just pointed out.
Yeah.
They just don't care. What can they try to do next once that ban is smacked down? I don't know, but they will try.
Well, what they'll try to do next is what Colorado's doing. They'll try to institute a permit to purchase for, you know, these firearms and make it as difficult as possible to buy one if they can't ban them outright.
Right.
And they'll use the Fourth. I mean, you know, Virginia's in the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals jurisdiction. Fourth Circuit's already upheld Maryland's ban on so-called assault weapons. So Virginia will parrot what the Fourth Circuit said, right? That these guns are dangerously unusual. They're akin to machine guns. They're not protected by the Second Amendment at all. So it doesn't matter how many people own them. They can be in common use, but they're still dangerous and unusual. Or they'll flip that. They'll call it unusually dangerous. Again, I don't think that's going to work when the Supreme Court takes one of these cases, but we're waiting for the Supreme Court to take one of these cases, right? Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, let's go back to the right to carry argument. You talk about the second part of that Second Circuit decision, which said the ban on carrying in parks, all parks in New York State, facially constitutional, which means that there are at least some circumstances in which that law is constitutional. The Second Circuit, though, pointed out, you know, there wasn't an as-applied challenge to non-urban parks. The Second Circuit has specifically said urban parks are sensitive places because they are crowded public places where vulnerable populations can be. I think it's a BS argument, but that's what they've said.
That's what they said.
They left the door open, though, for, wilderness areas, right? State parks out in the middle of nowhere that are not going to be crowded, right? You can't make that argument. They left the door open for a challenge there. Going back to the Fourth Circuit, we just saw Novotny versus Maryland, or Novotny versus Moore, I guess. Cert petition filed at the Supreme Court. FPC, SAF, Maryland Shall Issue, Maryland Rifle and Pistol Association, some individual plaintiffs challenging the sensitive places that were put in place after Bruin. One of those sensitive places, Mark, parks. Again, urban, non-urban parks. And the Fourth Circuit said, I was just looking at this decision earlier today, Fourth Circuit said it's okay to ban guns in state parks, even though they're not crowded. Because, you know, if you go back and you look at what they did in the 18th or in the 19th century, they banned guns in urban parks, and that's okay. And even if these places, like, you know, state forests are not akin to urban parks, well, they're still crowded places, or they're places of public assembly. Like, they're looking for any excuse that they can to try to uphold these bans. And Maryland's Bruin, post-Bruin law was terrible. I mean, it had its own vampire rule that was struck down by the Fourth Circuit. But it bans guns in all government buildings, all public assemblies that are broadly defined, restaurants that serve alcohol. So even if you're not drinking, you know, you can't go into an Applebee's or a Chili's if you have your concealed carry license. They could point to no law whatsoever that you know, banned the carrying of firearms in places where alcohol was served. So what do? They went back to that. Well, but these restaurants are crowded places, and it's okay to ban guns in crowded places. Supreme Court said,
Cam, let's go back to the founding. I got to stop you there for a second.
Yeah.
Most of this nation's business was taken up in taverns back in the day. Those were popular meeting places. I find it really hard to believe that they decided, well, we can't have our conversations at the tavern because we're going to ban our guns in the tavern. It doesn't work that way.
No.
The absurdity of all of this. But what this, as I listen to what you're saying, 100% in 100% agreement, it just proves to us that this fight is moving back to the states, the individual states and the individual circuits, and which is why it's so important that we fight in places like Virginia individually. Arizona, the most gun-friendly state in the nation, has these goofy alcohol laws. You can constitutionally carry, except any place that serves alcohol, you can't go in. If you have a permit, you can go in, but you can't drink. Now, these laws carry the weight of law. You can be arrested and charged for violating that. Here in the state of Georgia, I can walk in my local tavern with an AR-15 over my shoulder and a Glock 17 on my hip and sit at the bar and order a beer, permit or not, in this state. So, you know, these are individual battles that are now being fought and waged in individual states around the nation, because Bruin is going to, and already is proving, whether the Fourth Circuit likes it or not, the Second Circuit just found out, hey, man, this is Supreme Court precedent. We have to act accordingly. And I think you're going to see that fall, those dominoes fall that way, federally anyway. Okay, that's where the states come in, and this is where the Democrats' creativity knows no bounds, as you just point out, in the state of Maryland. They're going to take every inch they can and force taxpayers to defend this nonsense in court. And here's the bottom line. They will eventually lose, but it will come at great cost, as you know. And by the way, just for fun, in Virginia, Buddy sent me a picture of a MAGA hat today, and underneath it, it said MAGA, and underneath it, it said "Make Abigail Go Away." So I like that. Maybe we'll start putting those out, right? You need those in Virginia, brother.
that's good. And so let's talk about Virginia. You talk about those seven lawsuits that have been filed, state and federal court. Yeah. I think it's really interesting that these the state level challenges too, because as I mentioned, you know, the Fourth Circuit's already upheld Maryland's ban on so-called assault weapons. So it's going to be difficult to challenge this at the federal court level until you get to the Supreme Court. But right. The state courts, I think, are a different matter. And, you know, we have not seen the DOJ file its complaint yet. We know that it's coming. I mean, Harvey Dillon has said, we'll see you in court. So we know that that lawsuit is going to be filed. Again, the effective date for this legislation is not until July the 1st. So DOJ has, I think, a little bit of time. You've also got requests for injunctions in place at the state court level in the GOA, VCDL litigation. So we may see this law enjoined. But we're also seeing, Mark, and I'm really pleased to see this development, we're seeing a number of Commonwealth attorneys. These are the district attorneys. Yeah. These are the prosecutors in Virginia come out and say, hey, listen, I'm not enforcing this. This is unconstitutional. And the way the assault firearm ban is written, you know, it's a ban on the sale. It's a ban on the manufacture. It's a ban on the transfer. It's not a ban on ownership yet. But then you have this related law that is a ban on the public carry of so-called assault firearms, right? So, you know, from an individual gun owner perspective, I think it's very difficult to enforce the prohibition on, you know, unlawful transfers, maybe even unlawful manufacturers. Certainly, it's difficult to do that proactively, right? I mean, if you catch somebody who's built a gun after this ban got in effect, maybe you could arrest them. But the carry ban, to me, is where we really run the risk of a lot of charges. And so I am very pleased to see these Commonwealth attorneys, Powhatan County, Spotsylvania County, Pulaski County, and I believe
Smith County.
Which one?
Smith County.
Smith County. Smith. Yeah. And Smith there may be a fifth one.
Let's go there.
Yeah.
I got a notice yesterday and I was looking for it prior to our going to air today and I couldn't find it, but I remember seeing a fifth come out. Now, ladies and gentlemen, don't hold me to that, but I can see it in my mind. I just couldn't find it in time for the show. But from what I understand, and again, I'm working to confirm this right now, but it looks like a fifth in the state, a fifth county. This is really encouraging to see. And this takes me back to the Second Amendment sanctuary movement back in 2020.
Yeah.
Virginia residents stepped up. Now, I could go in a lot of different directions here, but I'm going to stay here, as I say, inside the rails. This would not be a problem in Virginia if everybody who's now fighting this had gone to the polls. We wouldn't be having this conversation, but that didn't happen. We are where we are. We have to be pragmatic about that. But the fact of the matter is this kind of, I hearken back to that Second Amendment sanctuary movement, because if every one of those counties that said we will protect Second Amendment rights step up, if their prosecutors step up, you've got 96-97% of the state that just told Spanberger to go pound salt. We're not going to prosecute this. This law is unconstitutional. And don't think for 2 seconds the Virginia Supreme Court's not looking at this, because they are. There's no question about it. And that it is interesting to me when you look at the federal cases, the question is raised, well, the Second Amendment Foundation knows what the Fourth Circuit did. It was their case in the Fourth Circuit. The Snopes case, why are they filing Virginia in the same circuit when they know that the Fourth Circuit has already upheld that particular ban? Well, it's a multi-pronged approach because they believe that decision was wrong.
Yeah.
So when I say the cavalry's arrived, man, we're outflanking the governor hardcore on two fronts. This, with the prosecutor stepping up to the plate, telling the sheriffs essentially, look, if you make an arrest, I'm not prosecuting it. In other words, don't make an arrest because it's going nowhere. This is a three-prong approach. Now we're hitting them right center dead of their line. So it's a fascinating response to see what's happening in Virginia. And I just hope to God that the rest of the country and the rest of these Democrats are paying close attention. But it goes back to what we said originally. Mm-hmm. They don't care.
No, they don't. And they might when it does start to bite them in the rear end. But no, I mean, you're right. They're going to push as hard as they can for as long as they can until someone, in this case, that someone's going to have to be the Supreme Court. Maybe the Virginia Supreme Court, but I think ultimately SCOTUS, until they say, no, you can't do this. And until SCOTUS acts, they are going to continue to push. That is why it's important that we see these Commonwealth attorneys. And I got to tell you, I mean, you know, I covered the first iteration of the Second Amendment Sanctuary Movement in Virginia, and there were not a lot of Commonwealth attorneys who were actually stepping up and making these statements. You had sheriffs. You had a number of sheriffs. You had a number of, county supervisors. As you say, the vast majority of counties passed resolutions. But you didn't really hear Commonwealth attorneys get involved in this fight. And what's kind of fascinating is we've had a couple of sheriffs come out and say, hey, this is unconstitutional. I'm not going to enforce it. But I think as of right now, we've actually had more Commonwealth attorneys. And even if we can't confirm that fifth county, there will be a fifth, and there'll be a sixth, and there'll be a seventh here before long. I guarantee you. In fact, I've got a request into my local Commonwealth attorney. I emailed him yesterday, and I said, listen, we've got four of your colleagues who say they're not going to enforce these statutes. What say you? What are you going to do? And do you have a public statement that you'd like to share? I let him know I'm the editor of BearingArms.com, and, I look forward to hearing what he has to say. I haven't received a response yet, but hopefully I will. And if not, I'll put him on blast. We can all send him an email.
It's coming. Well, VCDL, too, I want to point out, is doing remarkable work. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, wherever you're watching this, you do not need to live in Virginia to join VCDL. This is a state-level fight, and you want to keep this from coming to your state, you need to help us now. Join AZCDL in Arizona. They're next. They're two seats away with a Democrat governor in the great state of Arizona. We've got to stop it right now before it comes to them.
Yep. Before Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus as well. I mean, you know, we saw what Freeburg, they did this past session. You've got a tie in the House. You've got a one-seat Democrat majority in the Senate. Absolutely, wherever you live, support your local Second Amendment organizations. But if you've got the time, if you've got, you know, even $5 to spare for these state level groups that are fighting, you know, real big fights, $5 can go a long way towards keeping those fights contained to those states so they don't come to your state too, right?
Well, that's the challenge. And that's why, you know, VCDL is $25 annually.
Yeah.
Guys, you can find it in your couch cushions. Okay. VCDL is $40 annually to join. That's a one-time deal. If you never want to donate again, that's fine, but join, because we need you. There's strength in numbers, and it's never been truer than it is right now. We need you on these petitions. It doesn't matter if you live in South Dakota, get in this fight. While we're at it, join the National Rifle Association, also based in Virginia, fighting desperately against these. They're one of the named plaintiffs, of course, with the Second Amendment Foundation in that federal lawsuit. But, you know, VCDL has already put out a formed response to these prosecutors. And I find it interesting because, as you know, prosecutors are an elected position.
Right.
And I'm listening to and I'm wondering, when you look back at that Second Amendment sanctuary movement, you're right. It was the sheriffs that stepped up in the counties. But if you look at an electoral map of Virginia, the entire state is bright red, save for those pockets in those Democrat-controlled areas, Tidewater, Richmond, Northern Virginia, of course, and then in the center of the state around Charlottesville. But the rest of the state is bright red. Those are all individual red counties run by sheriffs who were elected in those red counties by red voters, as were the prosecutors.
Yeah.
So I do expect to see some of these prosecutors, now that one fell, a second one, a third one, a fourth one, we believe a fifth one's coming. We're working on that as we discuss. There will be, as you said, a sixth and a seventh. And VCDL is putting this information out to all of those counties that were in unison with the Second Amendment sanctuary movement. And as we said, you get them on board, what good's their law if it's not going to be enforced? And it sends a very powerful message outside of having to go to the ballot box, which makes people feel very helpless. What am I going to do? I got to wait another 4 years for Spanberger to vote. In the meantime, I'm banged out of my rights.
Right.
No, this is how you fight it. This is how you do it every single day. That doesn't require you going to the ballot box. You step up and you get involved. It's very, very important right now.
Absolutely. Mark Walters, man, I really appreciate you sitting down with us. Hope you have a great rest of your week and a fantastic Memorial Day weekend. And look forward to doing this again. I won't be doing a show on Monday. I'd say I'd invite you back for a Mondays with Mark. But
it's a holiday.
Back in the regular circuit here before long, I promise.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Cam, I can wake up in any mood. I come on here with you and talk to you, and you just get my day going. Thank you, man, for everything that you do. I love you, brother.
I appreciate being the verbal cup of coffee. go enjoy the rest of your day, man. We'll talk soon.
Count on it. Thanks, Cam. Right.
Thanks, Mark Walters. Joins from Armed American Radio here on Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My thanks to Mark for joining us on the program. Make sure you are tuning into the Daily Defense that Mark does every weekday, as well as the Sunday Monster Cast. You can find it all at armedamericanradio.com. And let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Minnesota where, you know, again, Democrats so intent on passing new laws impacting lawful gun owners, they just completely forgot about violent criminals this session. Man placed on probation for threatening ex-girlfriend with a gun. You know, I don't know about you. I think this is a bigger issue than people owning things like AR-15s, but apparently not to Democrats there in Minnesota. This is from Fergus Falls, Minnesota, where a New York Mills man has been sentenced for threatening to shoot his former girlfriend last January. The victim, who had broken up with Cody Steinbach the day before, wanted to get her stuff from his house, and when she showed up, he let her in. She goes to the garage to get her stuff. He then begins to push her, tells her to leave. He walks away, comes back a few seconds later with a pistol in his hand. Victim told deputies that Steinbach actually fired off a round before pointing the gun at her chest. She said she stood in the garage as he then put the gun against her forehead. Shortly thereafter, a witness arrived at the home. The victim told him to call police. Steinbeck originally charged with a second-degree assault. But that was dismissed as part of the plea agreement. He ended up pleading guilty to threats of violence instead. He pled guilty back in March. He was sentenced this week and given 3 years of supervised probation. That's it. Now, I suppose there might have been problems with the prosecution, right? Could have been a he said, she said sort of incident, although I would think that if he actually did fire off a round, depending on where he shot, there would be evidence of that, physical evidence of that, perhaps in the garage. I don't know. I'm just a little concerned about this. I would expect Democrats to be concerned, too. But again, no, they're far more worried about you or me or other lawful gun owners continuing to possess AR-15s. God forbid somebody decide to buy one for the first time. And remember, their gun ban bill passed the state Senate on a party line vote, one vote margin, failed to advance in the House. In fact, gun ban legislation had been heard in committee, stalled out in committee. Democrats ended up pitching a fit, held a sit-in on the House floor when they couldn't get their way and get this gun ban through. And all the while, you know, proclaiming that the Republicans care more about their guns than their kids, while the Democrats held up legislation, refused to go along with legislation that would have devoted tens of millions of dollars for both public and private schools to upgrade their security, Democrats wouldn't do it unless they had that gun and magazine ban attached. I actually wrote about a new study at Barry and Arms yesterday. This was from Texas State University. It was taking a look at the effectiveness of simple things like locking doors, metal doors, doors, classroom doors that lock from the inside, in preventing deaths and injuries from school shooters. Now, in Minnesota, you've got some school districts that can't even afford classroom doors. They've got curtains instead of classroom doors. They would have benefited from the bill that was offered by Republicans that Democrats would not go along with. And this study shows that, again, a simple thing like preventing access to the inside of an elementary school, preventing access to classrooms in middle schools and high schools, can save an untold number of lives. Something that Minnesota Democrats could have done like that. They would have had bipartisan support among Republicans. But because they refused to pair that simple life-saving legislation with a gun ban, schools across the state of Minnesota are going to remain vulnerable and in many cases, completely unprotected. All right, on to today's armed citizen story from Oklahoma City, Channel 9, KWTV, reporting on a man who was shot and hospitalized in a Midwest City home invasion. You have to read the story to find out that this was the suspect, not the homeowner, in this particular case. According to Midwest City Police Department, officers responded just before 7:30 Thursday morning to a home near Northeast 10th Street and North Post Road after reports of a shooting. When they got there, they say that a man had broken into a neighbor's home in the area, and the homeowner had shot the intruder. According to the police department, the man was shot, was taken to a local hospital with life-threatening injuries. No suspect details have been released. The police department says that there's no threat to the public at this time, that the investigation remains ongoing. We will hopefully be able to give you more details, but this sounds like a case of self-defense there in the Oklahoma City suburb of Midwest City. And based on just the details that were described, unless there's some important detail that's been left out, I doubt the homeowner is going to be charged for shooting somebody who broke into his home. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, unable to do the right thing, an Atlanta man who saved a woman who was trapped by flash floods. Boy, these things can, you know, pop up in really just no time at all and become a very dangerous situation. That was what happened on Wednesday night. There were large parts of downtown and midtown Atlanta that were flooded because of heavy rain. One individual, George Brathwaite, rescued a woman whose car was so inundated with water, she ended up having to climb up on the roof of her vehicle. And on the other side of the interstate, Brathwaite and his wife are in the car, their car. He told Channel 2 WSB in Atlanta, said that the car was almost floating down the street from the highway. And my wife was like, go get her. Go get her. So he did. He got out into the water himself, made it over to her vehicle, told her to hop on his back. She did. He said, I'm a veteran. I did my time in Iraq, and it's fight or flight. A couple minutes later, WSB reports a Georgia Department of Transportation worker waded through the floodwaters, was able to clear a blocked drain, and the water started to recede. Say troopers showed up a short time later as well to help the Brathwaites. China Brathwaite said the woman was terrified, shaking, and everything. But ultimately, the Brathwaites and the unidentified woman were safe. Sounds like her car was, I think, okay, because the floodwaters could do a number on your vehicle as well. But I think she was able to physically okay. I think she was able to get on her way as well. The Brathwaites were too. So scary situation, but in the right place at the right time, unable to do the right thing, both for his wife and the woman he actually rescued, George Brathwaite there in Atlanta, Georgia. We thank you for your very, very good deed. And that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again next Tuesday. We will be off for the Memorial Day holiday. But check out BearingArms.com because we are going to be posting stories throughout the holiday weekend. And we'll keep you abreast on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information. Today is conference day at the U.S. Supreme Court. Because of the Memorial Day holiday, we will not get orders from this week's conference until Tuesday morning. We do have those five hardware ban cases that are pending right now. We've got two magazine ban cases, three challenges to so-called assault weapon bans, one in Cook County, Illinois, two in the state of Connecticut. We are approaching, we were over a dozen conferences for some of these cases, like Duncan versus Bonna, Gators Custom Guns versus Washington. And again, we're not really sure what the court's going to do here. The thinking is they're waiting for the Third Circuit Court of Appeals to release its decision on New Jersey's ban on so-called assault weapons and large capacity magazines. What happens if the court gets ready to adjourn for the session without that Third Circuit decision is unknown. They could hold those cases over, but that is, it's rare to see the court do that. They could grant cert to these cases, even though no circuit court split is currently in place. The expectation is that one will develop when the Third Circuit releases its opinion in the gun and magazine ban cases. But if the Supreme Court was going to do that, arguably they could have done so already. So the worst thing possible would be that the Supreme Court waits and waits and waits and then ultimately denies cert to all of these cases. That would be particularly troubling in Duncan versus Bonta, because that would mean that the ban on possession of these large capacity magazines could be enforced. That has been enjoined up until now. But if the Supreme Court does not grant cert in Duncan versus Bonta, if they kick that case away and let that law stay in place, then you are going to have a large majority of California gun owners become criminals overnight simply for keeping the magazines that they lawfully purchased and lawfully possessed. So I'm hoping that that worst case scenario doesn't come true, but it unfortunately is a possibility, depending on what the Supreme Court ultimately does with these hardware ban cases. Anyway, we'll be talking about that on next week's Bearing Arms Cam and Company. Again, until then, be sure to check out BearingArms.com, keeping you abreast on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. If you like what you see, we'd also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member. You can go to BearingArms.com/subscribe, use the promo code FIGHT, and take 60% off your membership. No matter what tier of support you choose, you'll be supporting the work we're doing at Bearing Arms, and I really do appreciate that. Plus, you'll get some great benefits. We had our weekly live chat for our VIP Gold and Platinum members yesterday. We were talking about the Second Circuit decision. I've got a great bunch of folks who tune in every week. Would love for you to be a part of that as well. So just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe Use the promo code FIGHT. Take 60% off your membership. Have a great rest of your week. A fantastic weekend. Remember the true meaning of Memorial Day as you are enjoying that extra day off, hopefully. And we'll see you back here soon. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.